Sundays belong to the NFL on Sports Radio WNML. And it starts now with the NFL Report, live at Carino's and Pigeon Forge. Learn about matchups, last-minute injuries, and the latest news from the NFL. Live from Carino's, here's your host of the NFL Report, John Wilkerson.
Here's a snap. He throws it down the field. Oh, that is Chase Claypool into the end zone for a Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. Wide open from 35 out, and Ben kind of knew it.
Yeah.
Bill Hillgrove, the voice of the Steelers. Chase Claypool had himself a day against the Philadelphia Eagles. Three touchdown catches, a touchdown run, and the Steelers, back in action, get the win. Welcome to hour number two of the NFL Report. I'm John Wilkerson with Tyler Ivins and Vince Ferrara, as we're with you until 12:30. And today, we are set up here at a wonderful locale, which is Carino's Italian restaurant on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. We're talking about an authentic Italian restaurant that has all the favorites with a little added spice. They've got the great Italian classics. They also have their one-of-a-kind spiced Italian favorites. All of their offerings handcrafted from the finest, freshest ingredients available. Whether you're craving the Italian comfort food like the 16-layer lasagna, which they come in early to hand-roll the meatballs and build that 16-layer lasagna, Vince, one layer at a time, which is what makes it so magnificent.
Yeah, absolutely. It would not surprise me if they have a 16-person crew to put together that 16-layer lasagna. I mean, you're talking the ricotta cheese, the mozzarella, the parmesan, sausage, you name it, it is on there. And you can build your own pastas as well. Just their flexibility, the depth of the menu, it's incredible. And they do so many things well. And because, John, they have so many great choices on the menu. I made the decision I'm going to go all different, all new things today. And just like every other time I've tried to do that, it's been a huge success. So we'll go new and fresh and find something else great on the menu because they have so many options.
Well, but what makes that difficult is the fact that you know that you've had things that were so incredibly wonderful before.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, gosh, I've been thinking about that the whole time I was driving up. But then you see this. It really is fantastic. And also remarkable what they do on Mondays. Every Monday is half-price family platters. So you can come on in and have great food and let the family enjoy it all.
No doubt. And it's the portion sizes as well that's so incredible. I mean, they bring you out, whether you know you're doing you know the chicken dishes or pasta, and there's just this mountain of pasta in front of you. I mean, it's like the extended table at the Ferrara household or any Italian home, where there's just not enough time to humanly eat all the food that's available. So you're going to get a couple, two, three meals probably out of the portions. It's just incredible.
And you got the bread.
Oh, yeah. with the perfect oil and spices, man.
Yeah, so that's where we are today at Carino's on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. I'll tell you what, I threw a little discipline towards Philip Rivers' way. I'll go ahead and throw out the Cleveland Browns and the Indianapolis Colts matchup of 3-1 teams, which when we weren't sure that the Titans-Bills was going to happen, because there was still a little question mark hanging over that contest, that was the matchup going into last week based on records for each team. But the Browns right now are riding a hot streak. For as bad as they looked in starting the tenure of one Kevin Stefanski, Tyler, they have been on their game since then and can't wait to see what happens as they go up the one-loss Browns against the unbeaten Steelers today.
If there is any game that I am the most confident in on how it's going to play out today, it's going to be this Pittsburgh-Cleveland game. To stay with the Browns, I have to say, man, I'm still waiting for my co-host on the starting lineup to start growing his mustache. Because on our program, we had a mustache bet where I would ride the saddle with Baker Mayfield over a three-week period, and that William R. West would go with Garner Minshew. And look, he could not have set it up for a worse opportunity for Minshew to not perform to the level of Baker Mayfield. And as much as I want to praise the quarterback under center, you also have to just look at what that running game has done. You see them just add so many pieces that at times you just say, why are you doing this? That's not the direction your franchise needs to be going in. All this year has done before Chubb goes out with a knee injury is the combination of Chubb and Hunt have led the National Football League in rushing yards. You're seeing excellent game between Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry working out a way to find a way to get into the end zone. And then on top of all this, the money they spent on the offseason getting important offensive line pieces to protect Baker Mayfield are also paying off. So, look, we could talk about 94. We could talk about the fact that Bill Belichick and Nick Saban were on the same staff in Cleveland and the cool headsets and the starter jackets, and this is the way it should be. The Bronies are back. Let's go Bronies. And a family in Cleveland who it's just, you know, it's their own piece of just fall pie to love Cleveland Brown football again. But as awesome as I love this Cleveland story, and I can't believe when I got done with my fantasy draft, I had players like Odell Baker and some of the others on my team. Like, how is this team going to get me to a championship? So far, so good. I think we're going to get a real gut check moment today for the Cleveland Browns. This is great. This has been awesome. I can't believe we would actually talk about the Browns in the playoffs right now. But Big Ben is back, and he is in the driver's seat for comeback player of the year. And this is a Pittsburgh team. When Big Ben is under center, they can push teams around. And they can make things look really messy. And there's a chance today, I have a feeling, that Pittsburgh and Cleveland, that we're going to see the same story. I am a big fan of Pittsburgh. I'm a big fan of 3.5. And I think, you know what, at least we're going to get in store of that AFC North showdown. Vince, don't laugh at me. I'm telling you, go to the window and take Pittsburgh -3.5. You love it. I'll buy everybody Johnny Carino's blood. You can order everything on the menu when Pittsburgh covers against Cleveland today.
Is anybody offering odds on who, what side swings a helmet at the other? Is there any kind of a prop bet that's going?
That's right.
Vince, Miles said that he believes that everything is squashed between Pittsburgh and Cleveland. That he believes that was a last year thing and that was just a knee-jerk reaction, and that he doesn't believe there's any bad blood left. But he said, I say that, I got to wait till I get in the trenches. You know what? This is one host who has issues letting go of I've always looked for my pound of flesh, as rotten as that sounds. I'm going to tell you right now, maybe because Mason's not on the roster anymore, but he's not, right? I didn't think he did. I thought Dobbs took over his spot whenever they traded or picked him up off free agency.
Yes, and they kept Duck Hodges as well.
That's right. Man, I'm going to tell you right now, perhaps because he's not on the roster, it is water under the bridge, but these are two teams that also don't like each other, and they also have to play each other twice a year, and Cleveland also has a quarterback on the other side of the ball that likes to run his mouth a little bit, so he can say what he wants when he's in front of a camera. I'm going to be very interested, John, to see how these two teams go at each other, especially the first time Garrett tries to break through that offensive line to get after Big Ben.
Yeah, I am as well, but I have been impressed with what Cleveland has done to get to this point, especially the way that they scored first, fell behind against Dallas, and then just left the Cowboys in their wake. It looks like they found an extra gear, and Vince, well, granted, it could change the way he wakes up today, but Odell Beckham Jr. is a pretty happy camper right now, and that's always a good thing when you've got him and Landry and just all of the things at your disposal. Obviously, it hurts that you don't have Nick Chubb to work with because he's done for this year. But at the same time, as Tyler was pointing out, you've got Hunt, and you also have another running back that has shown that he's capable of helping shoulder the load. But I just think that Cleveland carries a lot of momentum. I, for one, also not a huge fan in terms of their ability to go to Pittsburgh and get the win, but I think they're fully confident going in, which they couldn't have been when they squared off last year.
Yeah, and there are the biggest key to a lot of what you said, John, running the football, Odell Beckham Jr. being happy, the fact that they're 4-1 at this point and winning games, and even in this discussion, to me, it all starts with the ability to reach Baker Mayfield and get him to play within the system and not try to be the hero down in, down out. He is not the best player on that team. He can be as confident and cocky as he wants to be. He has to take care of the football and be efficient. They rely on the running game. That opens things up in play action for Baker Mayfield. He can still run around a little bit, make some plays, but he cannot be the quarterback of that team thinking that he is the superstar savior, number one pick. He has to be a game manager with playmaking ability, and that is the biggest reason why all of this has come into play and improved for the Cleveland Browns, is because that guy is not trying to do too much, and he's getting the best out of his teammates because he is not being selfish like I think he has been and trying to do too much prior to this year.
Yeah, I think last week against the Colts, he did a really nice job of picking the spots when to run. Mm-hmm. And it's almost an insult to say to a quarterback, well, he did a great job managing the game. Not saying he is a game manager, but I thought he managed when it was time to run, as he made his progression. I just thought he handled everything well, because the Colts had their chances, but in the end, Cleveland got the job done.
Here's the thing with Baker Mayfield. He's got a 61% completion percentage this year, which is an improvement for him. And it where he was at 59%, actually as a rookie when he kind of surprised people, he was at 64%. But his three best completion percentage games this year are when he's thrown 23 times, 23 times, and 30 times. When they can do other things and don't ride on him and depend on him is when they play their best football. And I just think you got to give Stefanski a lot of credit for being able to reach Baker Mayfield and get him to play this way. We'll see if it sustains. Maybe against, now that they're now in their big boy games, maybe he does revert back to trying to be the hero, and then things start to have a domino effect after that. But he's the key to me.
Well, this I think go ahead, Tyler.
This might be an unpopular opinion, Vince, but how the Browns do so well with Baker Mayfield and those percentage throws and completions is they should be they're doing things the way that a certain program in Knoxville, Tennessee should be doing things. And that is forcing the run down your throat 66-68% of the time with Hunt and Chubb, like a program and getting college football. And then whenever certain passing opportunities allow themselves in certain easy start with the run, beat them with the pass, that's how the Browns are doing it. Baker's not having to do too much, and you don't need to when you have two all-pro caliber guys like Hunt. Hopefully down the line, Chubb will soon find some kind of recognition like that. Again, maybe not going to be popular, but they start with the run. They beat it. That's AFC North football, is it not? I'm going to run it down your throat. On the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to try to stop your run, and then we're going to have one of the better place kickers that are going to put one through 2017, 23-20 through the pipes in the fourth quarter. And if we beat you two times, we know we're probably likely in the driver's seat come December to win the AFC North. Start with the run. Only do so much when you need to when you're in passing situations. To me, Cleveland isn't making it difficult. They're establishing the run, and they're winning football games.
We've also seen completed passes from, let's see, 2 weeks ago, Landry.
Yeah.
He's thrown a couple of passes this year. Odell Beckham Jr. threw a pass this past weekend. It's always when you have the other side guessing as much as apparently they have to do. Now, timing's everything when you throw in a wrinkle like that, but I think Stefanski right now is having a lot of fun, and when he's having fun, I think the team's having more fun. Again, we'll see how it works for them when they play at Pittsburgh today. I think the Steelers are a little bit under the curtain, under the radar, Vince, for the fact that they did have to spend that frustrating time on the shelf through no fault of their own while waiting for the situation with the Titans to get ironed out. They had their bye week in now, retroactively, to say, oh, that was your bye. They then lost the bye that they had planned. They had their Ravens game moved back. They had their Titans game inserted into that portion of the schedule. And I think they were well within their rights to share their frustrations with the situation. So I think for them to come out and play as well as they did against Philadelphia, can't wait to see that matchup against Cleveland today, because as I said earlier when we played the clip, Claypool looks to be a very strong addition to their receiving core. And you wonder with the fact that Smith-Schuster has not set the world on fire, and to his credit has battled some injury, which I think has taken him off of perhaps the path he was on when they made the decision to go in a different direction from Antonio Brown. Claypool could be one of those very versatile guys when you look at his speed, his ability to run the football if you want to. I think he's somebody who could perhaps pass Smith-Schuster in terms of his importance to that franchise.
I agree. And what did we say when we were in week one, John, and we were talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers and, you know, contenders in each conference? My biggest question about the Pittsburgh Steelers was, do they have enough weapons on offense, and do they have a number two receiver? Because I don't think Juju Smith-Schuster is a good enough number one. I think he is could be one of the best number twos.
Yeah.
So if Claypool does take over that lead spot, I think that only helps both of them. And obviously it helps the team as well, mm-hmm. but I think they will fall into their more appropriate roles. And they're still finding ways to run the football. And obviously Big Ben is having a terrific season. So the development of that kid is massive. Johnson, to me, is just a little bit too up and down, but maybe he's a good number three. So I think the development of Claypool, it can take them to another level.
Deontay Johnson, guy who leads targets right now in the receiving corps of Pittsburgh, right. out today with a back injury. So if you thought maybe the four touchdowns was a fluke last week for Claypool, trust me, he'll get plenty of targets today in this matchup against Cleveland.
And you talk about desired in fantasy football. I mean, after everybody put in a waiver claim.
Including... You know, John just brought up Alexander Mattison. Everyone, we got Dalvin Cook. Boys, for somebody who had the number one waiver priority and is stacked at running back and Big Ben is his starting quarterback, you best believe that number one waiver priority I had held on to for 6 weeks. Claypool, welcome to the old Dirty Murphys.
Nice.
Well, we certainly hope it's a long and successful tenure. With the Philadelphia Eagles, they, of course, had stormed into first place in the NFC East by winning a game. They have Sanders, who I think is doing a nice job. I mean, look at the numbers. Only 11 carries, but it results in 80 yards and two touchdowns. They actually had, when you look at the box score, they had the leading quarterback, they had the leading running back, and they had the leading receiver, but it resulted in absolutely nothing as they lost 38-29. Granted, the win by the Cowboys and the rally against the Giants allowed them to leapfrog Philadelphia into first place in that NFC East. But, Vince, as we continue to just ponder exactly what is the path/future for Philadelphia, how do you hang on when you have that kind of production that results in absolute nothing?
Well, you have the New York Giants on your schedule in two of the next 4 weeks. I think that's part of it. You also go head-to-head with the Cowboys. After this other this Ravens game today, they'll be very difficult for them, and I don't see them winning. But then it kind of loosens up for a few weeks, Giants, Cowboys, Giants. Then it gets tough. Then it's Browns, Seahawks, Packers, Saints, Cardinals after that in consecutive weeks. Have fun with that. I don't think they're going to the postseason. I don't care what that division looks like.
It is a long road for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, the Steelers got the win last week to improve to 4-0. And now a team that did not get the win last week and is still searching for that. We saw week before last, Houston decide that it had seen enough with Bill O'Brien, and so they fired their dual position coach and GM. The Atlanta Falcons got rid of two people after last week's loss. It's the first time that they're 0-5 to start a season since 1997. They were 1-7 at the break last year, or I should say at the halfway point. But Dan Quinn, 5 years on the job, including a trip to a Super Bowl, goes 43-42. They've had back-to-back losing seasons. Doesn't look like this one's going to get straightened out anytime soon. Raheem Morris takes over as interim coach, and their GM had been in place for 13 years and had seen them to the playoffs six different times, as well as the franchise's second trip to a Super Bowl. So the question is, what's next for Atlanta in that regard?
Well, the Dimitrov firing was interesting because it's not like he was connected with Dan Quinn, like they came in together or anything,
right.
Or the same person like Bill O'Brien with the Texans. And he's been thought of as one of the better GMs,
mm-hmm.
but they have missed on draft picks. And that goes back to my earlier point. If you miss on your draft picks, it's very difficult to get better or not slide backwards. And the Falcons, look how many pass rushers they've tried to draft there. and it doesn't work out. Even when they bring guys in free agency, it doesn't seem to work. And then they've been hit by injuries in the secondary a lot. When you know a couple of years ago when they were playing really well, just haven't been able to be good enough in the offensive line. Just too many misses. And so I think it's interesting that you're starting to see the coaches and the GMs go together now. I wonder if that's going to be a continued trend in the league. You know, I hate it for Dan Quinn. Obviously, you know, until here recently, he did a good job. Got him to the Super Bowl. Seems like a nice enough guy. But it definitely was time for a new voice. I don't think Raheem Morris is going to be the guy. I saw him, you know, with the Bucks. Obviously, he's a placeholder right now, and maybe they can rally around him. I just don't know that they have the roster for it to make any kind of massive turnaround this year.
Yeah, to the owner's credit, he says we'll let the incoming GM and coach decide what the future is for Matt Ryan.
Right.
A lot of times you have guys that, I mean, other owners, say west of here, southwest, will certainly say, and but not be afraid to share their opinions in terms of football operations. Our nation's capital is another area where you can see something where just shut up and let the football people do their work. I do think that it's that's the way to approach it. And Grant, you're talking about Matt Ryan, a former league MVP. He puts up good numbers, but you just haven't seen wins since they made that fateful trip to the Super Bowl, Tyler. And so this is a franchise that now certainly is in transition. And when you look at, say, Julio Jones, who unfortunately continues to battle more and more injury after rising to franchise record status as leading receiver in the history of the team, I just think it might be tough for some Falcons fans as they say goodbye to some very familiar faces over these next few months.
And to your point, a lot of people tune into this program about fantasy updates as well. Julio is active today, so it'll be the first time you'll be able to put him back into your fantasy lineup in about 2 weeks. I think, John, what has happened to the Atlanta Falcons this year is what needed to happen to the Atlanta Falcons. I know there are Falcons fans who will hear me say that and go, what is Ivans talking about again? Here's my point. Look at how you lost brutally on that onside kick in week 2 to Dallas. Look how you turn around the very next week and you're trying to push those demons out the window and you only allow Chicago to come back down 17 in the final minutes of the third quarter to come back and win that football game. Every Falcons fan that I've talked to since the Super Bowl have said, it's not Dan Quinn. It's not Dan Quinn. We just, you know, man, we're just one move away. We just need one defensive piece. And I'm telling you, man, we couldn't get Vic Beasley to repeat what he did when we drafted him. It goes back to what Vince said just moments ago. Some of those draft picks haven't panned out in the way they thought that they would or that they thought that they could impact immediately defensively. I mean, sure, Calvin Ridley, that looks like it's a solid little piece, especially with Julio Jones, but it's some of the prime positions, especially when you play in such a pass-heavy division like the NFC South, where you know, look, you're going to rip it with Cam Newton in years past in Carolina, or as a sizable quarterback who you're going to have a strong defensive presence to stop them, or against a guy like a Drew Brees. And it just, you kind of knew that Atlanta was going to have their hands full in this division unless they made significant upgrades in the defensive side of the ball. It just seemed like in Atlanta, it was just, they're this close. They're this close. Listen, if this pans out, we can. Eventually, this close isn't going to get it done anymore. And for Dan Quinn, the best thing that could have happened to them was them lose the games the way that they did and brutal, make fun of them 6 days a week fashion and then reset it again on Sunday. So Arthur Blank would just go, enough. You're done. You're done. We're starting fresh. And the next person who comes in, I'm going to get out of the way. I'll oversee the operations from my suite upstairs. You just get us back to winning football again. Sometimes that whole, you're only as good as the middle. You know, Vince, for example, nobody wants to pick in the teens in the NFL draft, right? Mm-hmm. You're either completely bad where you're getting a difference maker at the beginning of the draft, or you're drafting near the end of the draft because you had a chance of making the Super Bowl and winning the whole darn thing. It just seemed with Atlanta, they were always in that, man, they're kind of in purgatory there at 19, aren't they? Oh, man, who's going to be available at 17 for the Falcons? No, if you're just that close, you're essentially this far away as I extend my hands out about 2-3 feet in front of my face. Just, boys, I think, honestly, as backwards as it sounds, this is the best thing that could have happened to Atlanta. Instead of maybe, just say, start fresh, let's go from the beginning and see if we can just build this towards a winner.
It'll be something to see exactly who they tab to be their coach, as same goes for the Texans. Texans, after they came away with a new coach and Romeo Crennel taking the reins on an interim basis, they go out and they get the win, and it just seems to be a breath of fresh air. Vince, do you think there's that same opportunity for the Falcons, that it's just, okay, finally, we know that there's been a dark cloud hanging over this team for the longest time, because you knew at some point, as Tyler was just highlighting, the hammer was going to fall. Now it's fallen. Does this give them the opportunity to hit that reset button?
I think maybe a short-term jolt, but I think they're not. They wouldn't be able to sustain it. You know, they've got the Vikings, Lions, Panthers, Broncos. There's winnable games there. So, yeah, I think short that gets them to their week 10 bye week. So, sure, maybe they can go on a little bit of run. I don't think it is for any sort of playoff berth. The second half of the schedule gets a lot more difficult after that. So I think this, it's the right move, and maybe they can sort of get the pressure off of them. I mean, I think what the Falcons have been carrying with all of those blown leads, I think that's tough. And then the questions about the head coach. So this may relax them short term, but in the end, it's going to be about the players on the roster and guys maybe looking ahead next year and all that kind of stuff. So long term, they won't be able to sustain it, in my opinion.
That's Vince Ferrara with Tyler Ivins. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got more coming your way as today, the show here at Carino's on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. And you're talking about an authentic Italian restaurant, all the favorites, even a little added spice. So come see for yourself. You can join Carino's every Monday night for half-price family platters. Wednesday night is Wine Wednesday. All bottles of wine are half price. So whether you love the classics or the spice, it'll always be fresh and handmade to order at Johnny Carino's. You can check them out at carinos.com. More of the NFL report coming up on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Now back to John Wilkerson at the Carinos in Pigeon Forge with more of the NFL report.
Snap and hold look good. Kick is away. It's up and it is off the upright. It's off the upright. It bounces back into the field of play. No time on the clock, and this one's going to overtime. Unbelievable.
That is the voice of the Saints, Zach Strief. And that's how close New Orleans was to losing on Monday night to the Chargers, as the kicker for L.A. just missed. I mean, just missed. It looked like there was enough of that angle to where you see that very rare doink that actually caroms in between the goalpost, but that one caught enough of the right upright to bounce back onto the field and allow that game to continue, where in overtime the Saints indeed got the win over the L.A. Chargers. This is the NFL Report. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara and Tyler Ivins. And once again, I'll say this. I came very close to slapping the kicker for the Chargers, Badgley, as opposed to Philip Rivers, simply for the fact that he had trademarked the phrase money badger.
Right.
So.
Oh, no, he didn't.
So if you are going to do something like that, you best be a money kicker. And he's been good. But that was one the Chargers needed in the worst way, and they didn't get the job done. It's so that comes back at you double when you've got that in your back pocket for what you feel is the marketing potential. Am I right, Tyler?
Look, as a guy who has trademarked a lot of things or has attempted to trademark a lot of things, I have to say that might be just the poorest attempt at a trademark. Like, that's even low when, like, remember when Minka Fitzpatrick tried to trademark Fitzmagic, and you're just like, no, dude, no, you're not, please don't do this to us. And it just, there are just some people out there that I just continue to shake my head at and just go, you know what, maybe I just don't get it. And this is one of these things where it's like, you know what, you can't give yourself your own nickname. And some people are just put themselves in a situation where it just doesn't come together. Remember when Jameis Winston was in the middle of the Bucks huddle and was trying to get him hyped up, and he did the W and tried to eat his W and said, let's go out there and eat this W, and nobody got hyped up, and he went out and threw four interceptions? It's just like, all right, you missed the boat on this one. They definitely missed the boat on trying to force a nickname into the fold. It doesn't work like that. You got to be given that nickname.
Yeah, Jameis, we can't eat W's if you serve interceptions. Okay?
Ooh, well done. Well played.
Hey, can I ask you guys a question real quick about that Chargers game?
Yes.
And maybe this is something that's still stuck in my craw from last year on how the Rookie of the Year voting went down between Kyler Murray and Josh Jacobs. Yes, Vince, I did have a ticket on Jacobs to win Rookie of the Year. So here's my question. I want to play the name game real quick because I was actually taken to the woodshed on the morning show earlier this week when talking about this game. I want to play the name game. It's Joe Burrow versus. Joe Burrow versus. So far through 6 weeks, 5 weeks through the NFL season, who would you give her if you all had a Rookie of the Year vote? Would you give it to Joe Burrow or would you give it to Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I would give it to Joe Burrow.
I agree.
Joe Burrow or Justin Jefferson?
Still go with Burrow.
Yes, I would go with Burrow. I know where this is going, by the way, but keep going, Tyler.
Joe Burrow or Jonathan Taylor?
Burrow.
Still going Burrow.
Okay, fine. Then I'll just go ahead and pull him out of the cabinet right now. Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert?
Yep. I knew where that was going.
Yeah. I'm still going Burrow.
Ooh, okay.
I'll go Burrow.
He has a win.
Yeah. And
fair.
He played a little bit longer than Herbert. Yeah.
But at the same time, I also think this has been something that has been on his back since draft day.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else that Tyler has mentioned has been in that same position. What you have been is it's been opportunity for Edwards-Helaire. It's been opportunity for Taylor. And you've also seen who is the lead back or most veteran back for both the Chiefs and the Colts go by the wayside. Marlon Mack due to injury. Williams opted out of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been given chances. They haven't had to shoulder the load and be the new face of their franchise. Same for Herbert. What he had the chance to do was get comfortable in the offensive system for the Chargers. Granted, he was pressed into service because Tyrod Taylor thought he was just going to get a shot for a cracked rib.
Sure.
And lo and behold, hey, we threw in a punctured lung with no extra charge. so we haven't seen him since. I just think that the pressure has been different for Burrow than it is for Herbert. But I also would, and just to get to where you were heading down the path, Tyler.
Sure.
This is 5 weeks in. I mean, there's still 11-plus weeks of season to go, so my vote could definitely change. But to this point, Joe Burrow has been the only person of those that you mentioned that were facing from the start. This is on you moving forward. This is all about you and what you get done. And so I just think that he's handled it well, and that's why he would get my vote now. But that doesn't mean he would get my vote at the halfway point or even at the end of the year.
There was a point in time where I just simply said, probably 3 years ago, if you draft a quarterback out of the Big 12 or the Pac-12, you're setting yourself up for failure. Pat Mahomes has changed that narrative for me from the Big 12. There's a good chance, and maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment. Maybe I'm just a prisoner of the 3-week moment, 2-week moment. But Justin Herbert might be changing that from the Pac-12 standpoint as well.
Goodness.
We'll
see. The prisoner of the moment conversation. It's obvious this man works with Will West, but anyhow.
This guy rubs off on me in the worst way possible. I'm telling you, man.
But
this
you
guy's,
make very valid points. And I think right now, again, I picked up Herbert as a backup quarterback, so I think he's doing a wonderful job. And I also think that he's perhaps exceeding expectations when you go back to perhaps those critical points where, yeah, but, Vince, when it came to his profile on draft day. Well, yeah, but I think he's playing well. I think he's leading well. And, hey, I don't think that the Saints have lost any of their games based on his performance. I think he's given them a chance to win as they just find their way from one single-score deficit to another in his four losses playing quarterback for them.
No question. It's been so impressive. You think of the players that quarterbacks on the other side that he's gone up against. Patrick Mahomes, not only did he go toe-to-toe with Mahomes, he had a better passer rating than Mahomes. Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, not only did he go head-to-head, toe-to-toe with Tom Brady, he had a better passer rating in that game.
Yeah.
Drew Brees, not only did he go toe-to-toe with him, he had a better passer rating than Drew Brees in that game. He just needs
stuff.
Some help. He needs help. And here's some stat comparisons. And I agree with you guys on Joe Burrow. But let me give you a quick stat comparisons on Herbert and Burrow. Burrow, six games, 135 of 207, 1,304 yards. Justin Herbert, five games, 97 of 141, 1,195 yards. So not a big difference there. Touchdown passes. Joe Burrow, 6 to 3 interceptions. Justin Herbert, 9 to 3 interceptions. Time sacked. Justin Herbert, 9. Joe Burrow, 22.
Oh, goodness.
Passer rating. Justin Herbert, 107.1. Joe Burrow, 86.3. Just putting that out there, I love Justin Herbert. To me, checks all the boxes. The bigger question is, who would you take long-term? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's where people would say, ooh, wait a minute, what I'm seeing from Herbert has the arm, the stature, all that kind of stuff. Maybe people are rethinking that long-term. But to me, I still think what you see from Joe Burrow is spectacular, checks all the boxes, and he passes the eye test of leadership and all those things that you talked about, John. So it's interesting that now we believe in Herbert more. But Burrow was there to me at the top with Tua, and that nothing I've seen has changed that, in my opinion.
I'll say this. Anytime you mention the sack totals for a person in Burrow's situation as a top pick of the draft and with the team that needs the most help up front between the two, Chargers and Bengals, even though it no longer affects him, you just can't help but think that David Carr, it hurts him a little bit more when he gets up from one morning to the next, right, for all the abuse that he took as the top pick in the draft that was trying to lead the Houston Texans. He is somebody who definitely can relate. Andrew Luck also, in his retirement, can also say, man, I sure hope they find a way to protect him. Because you do wonder, again, getting back to what you were throwing out there, Tyler, I would have a lot more faith in Herbert's ability to finish the season than I would Burrow's through no fault of Joe's, just because, again, taking that kind of punishment has got to have a wearing effect, and you're still talking first half of the season.
And he's doing this without Austin Eckler as well. Now, granted, Eckler has only been out one game now, but it just – Anthony Lynn's defense is taking some shots defensively, and it doesn't look like it's going to be a promising season for the Chargers. But if this is a year in 21 when the draft rolls around in Cleveland, that you can get some offensive line help and you can prevent running into a Cincinnati situation where Herbert's scrambling for his life, then you know what? Perhaps maybe the Chargers do have the next person, and moving on from Phillip Rivers was the right choice. And it just, you know, there were so many people who said, look, take a quarterback in the first round, Chargers, or, and they were leaning more or, because there were some people out there who believed that perhaps maybe Tyrod Taylor still had a little bit left in the tank and could lead this team for a year or two, or perhaps maybe the Chargers could wait on the sidelines for perhaps a starting quarterback if things didn't work out, negotiations with their current team could fall into place to them. So they don't have to run into that situation, and right now it looks like that Justin Herbert, quarterback, first-round selection, was the right pick. And man, not bad for a three-star guy who a lot of people kind of gave Willie Taggart the stink eye for, right? Funny, because one of the guys that lost out to him just beat Tennessee yesterday as a starting quarterback at Kentucky, huh? So Justin Herbert's having a nice little time as an NFL quarterback since leaving Oregon.
That's Tyler Ivins with Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment, hour number two of the NFL Report. Again, today it's our privilege to be here at Carino's, 2425 the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. We talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's got company in the backfield. We'll talk more about that next as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Now back to John Wilkerson at the Carinos in Pigeon Forge with more of the NFL Report.
Jacobs behind Engel, Waller in motion. Snap back to Carr, give to Jacobs. He flies in the air, and he's in for the touchdown. Jacobs with the leap, a 2-yard touchdown, his second here in the fourth quarter. And the Raiders take a 39-24 lead with the point after coming up.
Chris Carino with the call on Compass Sports Media, who will have the broadcast for the Texans and the Titans on our airwaves. That's right. Chris Carino on a day that we're at Carino's. That works.
No relation that we know of yet. Well, actually, it's all one big family.
That's exactly right. He's family. The great thing is, we're family.
That's right.
Anytime you come in the door at Carino's, you're family. That's wonderful. But, yeah, Chris Carino, as we're here at Johnny Carino's, but that was the second touchdown run for Josh Jacobs. Vince, you take a look at exactly how that game unfolded, and it didn't take long for the Raiders to find themselves down 11, and then the way that they came storming back and then just left Kansas City in its dust. They did have to withstand a rally, so they get the win, the most shocking result from last week. But that was the call. Chris Carino, Jacobs, his second touchdown. Now, tell me what might be an overreaction from the Chiefs' loss and what might be a legitimate concern.
I don't know that I've heard all of what the theories are. You're talking about from the Chiefs' standpoint?
Correct.
I would say the biggest overreaction would be that the Chiefs now aren't the best team in football. It's one game. Like, you know, we mentioned earlier, there wasn't the expectation they were going to go undefeated. If you were putting that kind of expectations on them, then you're going to be disappointed and you're going to overreact to this. So I would say that they're not the best team in football. They still are. They lost the game. And then legitimate concern, yeah, I think, you know, maybe the totality of the offense being the way it is, taking a toll on the defense, and that accumulation of them being, you know, out on the field an awful lot. You know, they don't have a great secondary right now. So I would say maybe you could point to the defense with a couple of different layers to it. They're still the best team, though. So
yeah,
I would put that in the more legitimate category, and then the overreaction being that they're not the best team.
What do you think, Tyler?
I think that you're running into a little bit of a situation where, you know what, division matchups still matter. There are a lot of people who believe that perhaps they should have lost in week two when they traveled to Los Angeles to take on the Chargers. So, you know how often we say, they're just playing the Chargers, or they're just playing the Washington football team, or they're just playing the Lions. Isn't it funny that a lot of these breadwinners, whenever they start facing some of the teams that are just supposed to be the doormats, or they're just supposed to be the foot cleaners of the division, they always give them a tough game? I still think Kansas City is the best team in football. I still believe that Pat Mahomes is going to finish with the league lead in passing yards. A lot of people having this conversation because Dak got injured. He had the passing yard title through 5 weeks. You know, I still think things are going to end up working out well for Kansas City, but I think that it's just division matchup. You face a team twice a year. You see enough of a team. You kind of get used to and get a little bit of a, how can we eliminate some of the miscues we've had in the past? And one thing I will tell you, John, and certainly right now, let's just say Andy Reid now has plenty of mouths to feed depending on who they continue to sign offensively. If you told me, hey, where do you think a little bit of the miscue could be? I think Ferrara pointed it out just there. That's why I think when were we on together, guys? 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. I thought perhaps maybe the Eric Berry reunion was reality to that, or perhaps fruition would come with that. Yeah, they could fine-tune that secondary just a hair. But we'll see what plays out. Their offense, to me, still is the best in the league. And sometimes, guess what? A team's better than you.
Yeah, and I think that, as both of you all mentioned, this is something that's going to come out in the wash in terms of they weren't going to win them all. And this is something where you just saw things really start to click for Derek Carr and the Raiders when you look at Jacobs and what he can do, Waller, Ruggs, and you can just keep going down the list. Aguilar has been, I think, a very nice addition as well. But I just think that this was a team last year in the Raiders that were in a position to do exactly what they're doing right now, and that's compete for a playoff spot. They then got beat up a little bit. The wear and tear of the season, I thought, took them out of that mix, and they wound up finishing third in the division. I think they're a little bit stronger this year, and so I think this is just kind of a shot across the bow, and it should be a reminder. While it sure is cliche that when you are at the top of the flagpole, mm-hmm. you get everybody's best game. Mm-hmm. I mean, because this is their chance. Now, granted, for the most part, A lot of teams are going to fall by the wayside by the end of the first quarter or at the half or after three because it takes a lot to beat that team with that quarterback. But they're going to have their chance, and I think that as long as they can work past a lot of the injury that they've already encountered with their members of the secondary, their defense has been remarkable in what they did over the second half of last season and, for the most part, the start of this one. Got away from them in terms of the yardage and the ability to move the football and score that the Raiders showed this past week. But, yeah, I think an overreaction is, oh, wait a minute, they might be, you know, this or they might be that. No, they're still the Chiefs. And because they have a loss, some people take them off that top spot. But I think if you asked anybody who the team to beat was and remains in this season, it's the Chiefs. We have seen an addition to Kansas City's roster because the Jets decided enough was enough in terms of 19 months of Le'Veon Bell. They cut him loose despite working or trying to see if they couldn't make a trade. They just couldn't stomach him being around their headquarters any longer. He is set free and, lo and behold, lands in Kansas City. Now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire certainly turned everyone's head with how he performed in that season-opening win over the Texans. Chiefs have been lower half of the NFL in running the football since then. Still, when you have everything at your disposal, you don't necessarily have to worry about running the football, but that is a key component when you get to playoff football. So what do you think, Vince? First of all, what do you think? Are you surprised that Andy Reid welcomes somebody? Le'Veon Bell, very talented, but we also haven't seen him do a whole lot since 2017.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. I mean, they've tried to go the route of veterans. LeSean McCoy brought him in. So I think they're a running back by committee type of team, and they just don't see a whole lot of risk in it. I think they have a good enough locker room to where if he doesn't work out, ends up being – you know, problem case like an Antonio Brown, they'll kick him to the curb quickly and then move on and be fine. So they see a higher reward than the risk there. They're probably better equipped than a lot of other teams to deal with him. So I'm really not that surprised.
Your reaction first as the resident Jets fan on the panel, Tyler, to your team making the decision it made. And it was also interesting to hear how Gase reacted to it in the sense that I'd rather just talk about what we have in front of us. We don't need to talk about Le'Veon Bell. It's all about the Dolphins. What did you think about the move, and what do you think about where Bell lands and what's within reach for him?
I think that Le'Veon getting away from the New York Jets was the best thing that could have happened to him. This is going to come off as a Jets fan just – poor boy and his team are just bagging on his team. Just this organization has not been ran right since Woody Johnson left for other job duties due to politics. And I remember when Adam Gase came in, I just simply thought to myself, this guy can make it the difference for Sam Darnold, and this is the quarterback that the Jets need to be able to be part of the AFC East conversation. But ever since the draft that brought Sam Darnold in, and you build a foundation around Sam Darnold, they've done the complete opposite. Why go out and spend money on Le'Veon Bell, but then not upgrade your offensive line? This year, you go out and you make a draft pick to get LaMichael Pirine out of Florida. So your running back committee should be Bell Pirine, but what do? You go out and you sign essentially Adam Gase's best friend in Frank Gore to take carries away from the growth that is of Bell and of Pirine. It just seems that everything that's happening right now is kind of backwards for the New York Jets. And what's going to end up happening? The Jets are going to end up letting go of a player like Bell who's going to succeed elsewhere. They're going to end up moving on from a quarterback like Sam Darnold who will succeed elsewhere, and they will continue to just be the toxic environment that they are. You know, the nickname is gangrene for a reason. They're just going to continue to eat themselves from the inside out, and it just, man, it's toxic, man. And Adam Gase is just not making it any better. I mean, I'll tell you real quick, John, because we both just made comments about Gase, about us wanting him to be the next guy in line.
Yep.
The day I officially set sail on Adam Gase was watching what that defense did in the final minutes of that Thursday night game against Denver. They were out there trying to hurt Drew Lock, or excuse me, not Drew Lock, forgive me, who was the gentleman who started for the Broncos that game?
Brett Rippin.
Rippon, that's right, Mark Rippon, the family member. They were playing dirty late in that game, and that was a team that was beaten. That was a team who was playing dirty, and that's a team that I don't want to be any way, shape, form be a part of. I mean, it's easy to make fun of Jets fans because it's just what's happened in the franchise's history, but I'm not going to let low-hanging fruit and a guy like Adam Gase just completely run this franchise backwards through the dirt. And anybody who can remove themselves from the situation as quickly as possible, do so. Robbie Anderson, Le'Veon Bell, Quinnen Williams, or not, excuse me, not Quinnen Williams, but just Leonard Williams, who got traded for the Giants. Even
Jamal
if summer
Adams.
Trades... Bingo, Jamal Adams. The Jamal Adams situation, though, that to me, that's a little different. Another story for another time. But even good for Jamal Adams. It just, I don't know what to tell you, but I think Le'Veon Bell, if he does have anything left in the tank, if there's anybody who can find it, come on, boys, it's going to be Andy Reid, is it not?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that there is it's as you said, Vince, greater risk and greater reward, very little risk. But what we'll do is get a break and be back for the final half hour to today's edition of the NFL Report. We will set the schedule for today's showdowns as well as through tomorrow night when it's another twin bill on Monday Night Football. But we're here at Carino's on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. Still a lot to talk about, including what can the Titans look forward to as they look to make it a two-win week as well as bounce back from a Tuesday Night Football appearance. A final half hour to the NFL Report is next on 99.1, The Sports Animal.